Hello and welcome to the Roy Harper podcast, episode number 10 for June 2008. In this episode, we will have the concluding part of the interview with Dave and Sue Burnham that was started a couple of months ago and delayed. We'll have the A to Z of Harper, this time it's the letter J. And we'll have listener feedback and, of course, the usual wide selection of music. Now, this podcast is a little bit late this month, and I'm sorry for those of you that avidly wait to download it or pick it up in your podcatchers or iTunes or what have you. I somewhat ambitiously decided to do a computer upgrade project a few days ago, having received a payment for one of my invoices and thinking, okay, it's time to upgrade the machinery a bit. Now, I actually do this podcast on a Macintosh, on a laptop, and it works really nicely with the software that Apple give you built in, a thing called GarageBand. But my main work machine, and dare I say it, games machine, but also one that I do a little bit of the audio processing for the podcast on in a thing called Audition by Adobe, my main machine was getting a bit long in the tooth, so I did some upgrades, got some new hard drives, new processor and so on and so forth, and decided, since Windows Vista was up to Service Pack 1, it might be mature enough to actually use. What a fool! No, actually, it's okay, but it's taken me quite a while to get used to its sort of idiosyncrasies. But more importantly, the motherboard didn't like me putting four massive hard drives on it, and it kept having massive slowdowns, not letting me do backups properly. And I think I finally cracked it. But that kind of thing really annoys me, and I sort of worry at it like a dog until I get it finished. And as a result, what spare time I had was being used for that and not for doing podcasts. Anyway, we got there in the end. Now, I'm going to start off with some music, and I've realised that I haven't played any of the studio tracks from The Unknown Soldier yet during the podcast, so at least I don't think I have, so I thought it would be nice to start off with The Flycatcher.
Dwell, a ghostly coach and fall.
beautiful song. And I hope I don't spoil it too much if I tell you that my old friend Simon Taylor, who's currently the guitarist in the Jethro Tull covers band, the Dayglow Pirates, misheard one of the lines there as "Your Barclay Card" and was very confused about what the song might be about. Okay, here's the second part of my interview with Dave and Sue Burnham.
When they got back from doing this interview, they were full of it. I mean, they were completely mad, raving. And then suddenly Roy said, "Tommy Boyd," he says, "blimey, I remember him from somewhere. Where do I know him from?" "I remember," he said, I played on Magpie," you know, the kids' TV
yes.
programme. And did you know what he played?
No.
Well, I had a little bit of an internet search. It was the single version of One of Those Days in England, apparently.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How interesting. Yeah. I wonder if anybody's got that.
No, you never know. But and then, I suppose, from the Nick point of view, I mean, it was a great fun working with Nick. I suppose the one little tale to tell there was we did two gigs at the Beachcomber, one in 95 and one at 96.
Oh, I remember the Beachcomber, yeah.
Yeah, nice little venue. And this the 96 one, the one before had been fine, and Nick turned up the night before, so in the wee hours, well, actually probably about 2 a.m, and we spent the day together, and it was lovely. We got down there at 4 o'clock and wandered in to do the sound check. No stage.
What, they literally?
They'd taken the stage out. They decorated. This was just before the sort of the transition into what then became the Honey Club,
where the
bright young things go to throw shapes in the Church of Dance these days. And yet, no stage. I thought, oh, no. And that was a low, I tell you. I mean, if ever there was a low. Anyway, Nick went off for a walk, and I thought, oh, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
And about 5 minutes later, it was just... from, you know, up the way, and there were a load of builders working on the new beach deck, and Nick had chatted them up and managed to get this great slab of 9x4 plywood. So we carried this back
right,
in
right.
Nick got a load of beer crates and built his own stage.
Oh, he's a resourceful lad.
Fantastic, absolutely fantastic. And we used to have a problem in those days with... I mean, it's a thing about gigs. I know this has been a point of conversation before, but why do people go to gigs and talk?
I know. Bugs the hell out of me.
It really does. And I was talking to you about this, and you came up with an idea. Do you remember?
Yes. STFU
during the performance.
I think that from the Jazz Cafe.
That's
actually.
Right. Yeah. So I put all these signs up around the venue saying STFU during the performance. And Nick had obviously clocked this, and he came on and he said, "See all those signs?" He says, "Right, start throwing frilly underwear then." But yeah, that was a great gig. That was a great gig.
All right. So next question for you is, obviously, during those many years, which I'm amazed by.
Yeah.
You obviously got to see things from the behind-the-scenes aspect. And when I spoke to Darren in the last couple of podcasts about how he graduated, if you like, from being the fanzine author through to the manager and everything else, he said, you got to see the artist behind the scenes as well. And that his sidekick with Hors d'oeuvres, Dave Carlin, said he didn't really want to experience that side of things, and he'd much rather just go to gigs, be a punter, see the projected persona of the artist and not actually get to see the gory details. Mm. Did it change things for you at all, sort of seeing that side of things? I suppose it must have done to an extent.
I think it did.
It did, didn't it?
But not necessarily in a bad way.
Not in a bad way.
Right.
I mean,
it puts things in perspective,
yeah.
I think, from being an uber fan, if you want to call us
yeah.
that.
An obsessive.
Yeah. To realising that the person that you're an uber fan of is simply another
human being.
Absolutely.
Just with particular
who
qualities.
Happens to be very talented.
Yeah.
Artistic or whatever, in whatever way, but is basically the same as you and I.
Of course.
But with, extra sort of needs, if you like.
Well,
particularly when they're performing.
Yeah. Special needs. No, sorry.
extra needs.
It was that gig in Chelmsford, yeah. wasn't it? It was the first time we met him. And he scribbled all over the back of, to actually chat to him, he scribbled all over the back of Flashers in the Archives of Oblivion.
Mm-hmm.
But it was that gig when he said, "My songs are my Sunday best."
Oh, yes.
And, I mean, that's true for everybody.
Yes.
I mean, you can't be on all the time, can you? I mean, it's like comedians. Can you imagine if you're a comedian, people expect you to be funny all the time? I mean, you can't be, really.
Impossible, yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, I didn't actually spend a huge amount of time backstage because there's still quite a lot to do with running the gig anyway.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
sort of
yeah.
leaping around, collecting tickets, making sure that everything's ticking along, making sure the rider's there, getting everybody's food sorted out, mm-hmm. whatever. Mm-hmm. But those times that I was backstage, I think the good thing was that being a part of the whole process. I got over that sort of awestruck,
yeah.
tongue-tied, gibbering kind of, you know.
Tongue-tied? Never.
Well, occasionally.
You can edit that out.
No, I don't think I will.
But, yeah, so we had some good conversations, you know, some proper chats.
Mm.
And that was lovely. That was really good.
Yeah, so it didn't really change our relationship. As fans, except that it
no,
just
not
made
at all.
But you were probably perceptive enough to see that he was a normal person. I think just some people get a bit overawed by the persona and think that he's a godlike figure, which to an extent he is, but he's also a person.
Yes,
exactly. Well, that's exactly it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know,
you become more realistic about
you do. And those 8 years, Roy went through, quite a lot of changes in his life.
A lot of traumas.
One way and another.
Yeah.
I mean, when Simon and I helped to run the Heineken Big Top Music Festival in 93, the deal was we'd manage the second stage if they booked Roy and Nick. That was the deal. And I remember announced Nick on stage, and that's quite funny itself because Nick hadn't done that many provincial gigs at that stage. And I said, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Nick Harper. And Nick immediately came on, grabbed the microphone and said, ladies and gentlemen, please thank Dave Burnham. Dave is a very Nick thing to do. So
yeah.
I went back round to the little sort of porter cabin-y kind of dressing room where Roy was. And Roy was just, so down in the dumps around that time because obviously, he'd split up with Jackie. It was Dr. Doom without the optimist, really.
Oh, yeah, completely.
You know? So I said, look, come on, let's go and watch Nick. Come on. So I dragged him round to the second stage to watch Nick. And he really enjoyed it. You know, it did take him out of himself.
Mm.
So, we never had words or anything like that in those whole 8 years.
Pleasure.
He was always
pleasure.
Really
very
charming
yeah.
and,
yeah.
you know, we really enjoyed it. And, it was a great time, yeah.
So what made you eventually decide to stop doing it? Was it just that other work got too much for you? Or you got older and possibly needed a bit more sleep? I don't know.
yes, the sleep issue. True, but I think one of the big things was in all public service sectors was that bureaucracy has reared its ugly head. There's, what's that line? A queue of paperwork clear stretching out into the murk.
Yes,
from no change, and that's true. That started to take up a lot more of my time.
Yeah,
so that was difficult. And I started to, I'd started writing.
Right.
In, must be about 96 or 7 I started. I've been writing poetry since the early 80s, but I actually started writing sci-fi then. And I just needed more time for my own creativity. So that's the main reason. But I think for Nick as well, we'd really got the ball rolling. And the thing was,
in Brighton.
Yeah.
And the thing was, somewhere like the Comedia, if I put a gig on, I was only doing that one gig. So I had all of that costing for the promotion. I had to hire the venue, I had to hire the PA, all the rest of it.
Right.
And it's not all, it certainly wasn't all about money from my point of view. I mean, it's from putting the guys on. That was why I did it.
Yeah.
But what keeps Nick on the, going is the money from listening to your interview in particular.
Yeah, that was quite a revelation.
Yeah, from the live stuff.
Yeah.
I mean,
He kind of intimated that was the case.
Well, that's right.
So,
and I think
you wanted to get the best deal.
Well,
for
that's
him,
right. And if the Comedia put him on, which there was enough of a fan base, we'd got it to that point where it would work well, they could afford a better guarantee.
Right.
And I just really wanted that so that it kept his career afloat as well. So there's a number of reasons. But yeah, I think that's probably. There were other people who could do it as well as me by that stage. Really, and I just needed more time, I think, for that that creativity side.
Okay, we'll talk about your writing in just a sec.
Yeah.
I find it very interesting and very useful to talk to people about what other music they like, because I find that unless you're incredibly well connected or you're into sort of mainstream music, it's very hard to find other music that you might like. It's still, in this day and age, with people self-publishing their music and so on, it's still not particularly easy to find the bands that you might be into unless you spend hours and hours and hours and hours and hours browsing around the internet and listening to sound samples. So what other stuff do you like? And what would you recommend to a discerning sort of Harper enthusiast?
Oh, to a discerning Harper enthusiast?
Is there such a thing?
Well...
I'm not sure. I'm going to have to take that.
We went to see Robin Hitchcock the other night at the Comedian,
oh,
and
yes,
that was fantastic. And yeah, no two shows are the same with him. He's very similar to Roy. I mean, his melodies and arrangements are fantastic, but his lyrics are just great.
Yes,
absolutely superb. So I certainly recommend having a go at Robin Hitchcock's work. And Thea Gilmore.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, we like her.
Yeah, you found out about, was it on the Show of Hands site?
I think it may have been. I can't remember now how
I discovered
Thea, but she came to play in our local pub.
She did at the Greys.
Years ago. Well,
yeah, that was the first gig we saw.
I know nothing.
Oh,
so
crikey. I would remedy that. Fifth width, possibly.
Very, very good. It's hard to say, isn't it? Because, I mean.
Well, actually, I mean, it's difficult specifically for, you know, December Harper fans. I mean, other than that, there was. You picked up on band Christmas Before Last, didn't you? Bat for Lashes, who are based in Brighton, who now, obviously, they've just been. I don't know if they won. Did they win the Brit Awards Breakthrough Act? I don't know. They were up for it.
Don't know, mate.
No. But they're one of. I mean, you know my predilections for female singing voice. I mean.
Yeah.
And Natasha Khan is wonderful. So I'd really recommend listening to her. And we were at Trowbridge Festival last summer, and there's always a little surprise on the Sunday night. You never quite know. There's always this little band that turns up, and this year it was
on the third stage
on the Sunday night. On the third stage, the smallest stage, was Akasha.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they'd float your boat. They're kind of, if you imagine psychedelic, jazz noir, cinematic kind of music.
Nice.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I think you'll enjoy those.
Fun, yeah.
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 All right. The next question then.
Mm.
Before we prattle on too long, I'm trying to keep us to a short, vaguely short time.
You're doing very well.
It's going well at the moment. I've been asking everybody about the music industry because I think it's been in crisis for a number of years, and I don't think they themselves have admitted to themselves that it has been in crisis. But I think the EMIs and the Sonys and other large monoliths are having problems, and I think that talented singer-songwriters and bands and everything else have found other ways to get their message out there. Do you think there still is scope for the music business as such? And do you think there's still a need for record shops?
Ah, yes, that's a double question, really, isn't it? I would like to think there's still a need for record shops. I mean, I still cherish my vinyl. I know you do. I mean, the artwork on it in particular is fantastic. The thing is, I guess if you look at the way it's moving forward with the youngsters, and the MP3s and all the rest of it, I hesitate to use the word, I hate to use the word disposable with music, but there is that sort of element of kind of downloadableness and
consuming.
You know, kind of, absolutely. But then again,
is
things
that
like.
Is such a bad thing always? I mean, I think sometimes the big monoliths, if you want to call them that, of the music industry have had it their own way for far too long.
Oh, they've been coining it.
Absolutely.
Know, £15 for a CD a few years ago.
Yeah, that's
right. Oh, ridiculous. Absolutely.
But at the same time, I mean, the artist was only getting a fraction of that, obviously.
Mm-hmm,
most of them.
Yeah, true.
But I don't know. It's. I think the key to it all is live music.
Yeah.
And as long as there's a thriving live music scene, with young bands who or young singer-songwriters who can get out there and get their music heard by a lot of people, gradually by either whatever means, whether it's through the internet or however they manage it, that's the key to it. And then as long as live music is kept going, I think that's going to be
the key. You're right. You're absolutely right. It harks back to that thing we were saying about the communal experience, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely, absolutely.
I mean, you know, even if it's you know, two guys in a pub singing, you know, that's fine. You know, that's great.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'd just like to point out, by the way, the jangling sound is not my fool's teeth. Oh, it's Sue's bracelet. She's getting excited and waving her hands about.
Not that exciting.
No, I'll sleeve your fool's teeth later.
What would you say is the main way that you get new music now? Well, actually, no, let me rephrase that. What's the main way you hear about it, and what's the main way then that you purchase it?
Recommendation, right? Definitely. Radcliffe and McConey's radio show, some great stuff on there. Festivals. Find out a load of new stuff there.
For example, last year there were loads of bands on at the Larmatree that we'd never heard of and just went to MySpace, checked them out.
Oh, that's right. Lots of bands on MySpace. Yeah.
And just checked out what they sounded like.
It was great.
And we had had this fantastic list of new bands.
We'd sampled them, hadn't we?
Actually heard them. So we had an idea of what like. Yeah. So we made
and
a
we
point.
We could prioritise.
Yeah. We've got to go and see them. They sound fantastic.
So that was really useful.
So we saw, what was it, 30?
34 bands in 3 days or something. Yeah. Unlike Glastonbury.
Oh, well, that's.
It was like a mile between bands of mud.
So that was amazing. So we came across some really good stuff.
Yeah. The question is, have Mud ever played Glastonbury?
Oh.
Sorry.
Good question.
The
speciality tent.
Yeah.
Yes, the stacks and flares tent, the glittery jacket tent.
Quite.
But I think the other thing with MySpace, though, is that the kids, everybody at that age likes to feel that they're part of a special club.
They do. Well, yes.
And I think that's really positive for music. And that's certainly, again, you know, I know I keep going about MySpace, but certainly works for that. And it works.
Yeah, it
but
does.
Live music, yes, you're right. Mm. Yeah, it's that visceral communal experience that really enthuses people. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, maybe it will become more and more downloads. Maybe we'll see less artwork and less actual physicality of CDs and tapes and vinyl all gradually disappear.
Does the audio fidelity of it matter to you at all?
Yes. Yes. I mean, I still keep my vinyl up in the office and I take them out for a little gallop every now and again. And I think it's hard to say whether, probably because of the stereo I'm using upstairs, but whether there really is a difference in quality.
Yeah.
But I do understand technically that there is a bit of, is it a little bit of compression or something like that in the MP3s?
Yeah, you're losing a lot of musical detail, but it's musical detail that has been analysed as to be inaudible by the human ear.
Oh, right.
But I maintain that it's like a harmonic effect, then you can hear the after echoes or shadows of content even if you can't hear the actual content.
Mm. And that's very holistic.
I contend that it does make a difference and that you experience more of the music when you listen to the uncompressed version.
Yeah, and if you're under 18, you won't hear the mosquitoes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, we talked a little bit about your writings before then, but I know that you've become a very prolific author and you've had your wonderful little book of short stories published. So this is your chance, David, to reach a wider audience, perhaps, with your writings. Now, I'd like to say I've read some of your stuff, and I think you've got a very good way with words. And I really applaud anybody that can be that creative while holding down a full-time job and dealing with everything life has to throw at you. So what drives you to do this, and how do you think it's going?
Well, to start with, from the point of view of doing it and holding down a full-time job, I tend to do most of my writing when I'm on holiday. So we have a fortnight a year, we go to Greece and I'll just sit on the beach under a tamarisk and scribble for all I'm worth.
Right.
And then, you know, edit and type them up at a later date. So a lot of the work gets done then. Driving force, it's a question of if there's something you want to express, then you'll find the time for it. You know, you will make the time for it. And I started, right, say about 8-9 years ago, started writing properly, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
And short stories started to get a degree of positive feedback from various webzines and this sort of thing, which was very encouraging. And then one of the short stories was included in an American anthology called Silver Thought Ignition, a story called Anthropomorphs. And then another one turned up in another book called The Literary Bone. Mm-hmm. And there are quite a few lined up in the future as well with anthologies. and I'd amassed enough, really, to, I think, bring out a reasonably worthwhile collection. And it was around that time that we had a holiday in India mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. And we were fortunate enough to see tigers in the wild.
Yeah.
Which was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it was amazing.
And that gave me a direction and a purpose for the book. I thought, right, okay, let's do something positive with this. So all the profits are going to WWF.
Mm.
But the stories therein, I mean, it's quite an eclectic mixture of stuff, really. It's not sort of overt sci-fi and space opera. It's more extrapolation of things that we might be familiar with and conjectural ideas about how the future might unfold.
Well, I personally think that the best science fiction is a way of commenting on the... it's going back to what Roy's lyrics do as well, but it's a way of commenting on the human condition and things that people go through in their lives. But it's sometimes it's a sideways glance, but sometimes that's what you need to make you think about things a little bit differently when you've you know got into a rut about the way that you perceive and think about things.
No, absolutely. Mm. Yeah, you're right. I mean, ideas can come from more or less anywhere, but some of the stories, there's a future dystopia story called the Department of Puzzles, where in an alternative future the governing body use a form of Sudoku to as mind control over the populace. There's another one which features a futuristic internet auction site that mm-hmm. goes galactic. Another story that features skin rejuvenation products taken to the nth degree. So, yeah, things that people can certainly identify with, I think,
yeah.
as well. But no, I just really love writing. At any one time, I've probably got about 30 ideas on the back burner. And then every year, whichever sort of three or four shout loudest to get written are the ones that I take the sort of bare bones on holiday and then I get scribbling.
So are we going to get a Dave Burnham short story podcast from you at some point in the future?
I would like to do something like that for sure. It comes down to the old question of time again.
It does.
Do I invest the time in the writing or do I start to play about with podcasting as well?
One of the
that's a good point. Yes, you're right, actually.
Someone
yes, not by me,
it.
But somebody
yeah.
else. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, the Variant Frequencies podcast. Yes, absolutely. And they did a lovely job of it. Yeah, yeah, for sure. So, but yeah, I would like to have a go at it myself one of these days. But yes, it's a question of time. Would be fun. But then if I did that, you see, I'd have to get all the special effects, and I'd have to get all the bells and whistles, and you know.
Well, I've got a friend who's another podcaster who does it, and he puts on all sorts of voices and makes an extraordinary performance out of it. But it takes him weeks to do each episode.
Mm.
So, yes, I mean, if you want to go into that level of production, yes, it's going to use up all your time.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be done that way.
No.
If you're not a perfectionist.
Ah.
maybe that's the catch.
True.
So, here's your big chance to plug your book, I suppose. If somebody's interested in checking it out, where can they find out about it,
well,
David?
Probably on several levels, actually, bringing it back on topic again as
yeah.
well, is if you go to www.djburnham.com, couldn't be easier.
Okay.
And you can get to the book from there. If you scroll down, you'll see a picture of the book and click on that, and that will take you to the shop. But also at the top of that, there's a picture of Roy and a picture of Nick, which are photo links. And if you click on those, it will take you to a whole load of photographs we've taken of their gigs over the years.
Perfect.
Plus loads of gig reviews and album reviews and bits and pieces from the past, things that we've submitted to hors d'oeuvre, all that kind of stuff that have been transcribed. So you can get hold of those as well.
So it's a whole scrapbook.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Mm.
All right, we're sort of in the wind-up phase now, but one of the things that I'm really pleased has started to happen with these podcasts is that there are people listening to it that are new to the music. At one point, with Roy's stuff anyway, I'd started to think, you know, he's not reaching new people so much now. There was a time when we went to so many gigs, we kept seeing... I'm sounding like such an old git, but kept seeing these young people, and I thought that's great. He's, you know, getting the next generation in there, and I wasn't quite sure that was happening. But I know there are people listening to the podcast that aren't so familiar with the music, and I like to try and give a flavour of the kind of things that he does through the tracks that I play.
Mm.
But from your point of view, where's a good place to start for somebody that's new to the music and, you know,
live stuff.
Yeah, I'd frankly. Agree with that, actually.
But it gets better, doesn't it? Because there's...
the DVD.
Oh, on the top of Paul's collection, Beyond the Door. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's a top place to start with.
Top recommendation.
With Roy.
Yes,
and,
Roy,
yeah, and Lover's Music with Nick as well. I mean, yeah. you can't go wrong, really. Yeah. You know, I think the DVD is certainly to start with. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that's your starting point, frankly, and then build from there. I mean, if you recommend particular albums, you'll always be thinking, oh, yeah, but I should have said that track.
And the trouble is they're all a bit different and they all strike different chords, no pun intended, but...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the other way of doing it is do compilations, but I think live is the best way.
Yeah, I mean, it's where they're at. It's the whole thing, you know.
Now, Roy isn't getting any younger, as we all know. What do you think we can justifiably expect from the old boy in the future? Because, as you know, he's at the moment said that he's not going to be doing any more gigs for the time being, and he's committing himself to doing another studio album. Mm. I mean, are you hopeful about that? Do you think maybe he should retire gracefully at this point?
Never. Don't stop. Don't stop. Keep going.
Yeah.
But he's not getting any younger, as Paul said. I mean, you can't expect him to trail around gigging, you know, in provincial towns.
Right.
It's true.
You know, he's getting on a bit. He's getting past retirement.
I think if anything, it'll have to be choice gigs in London or wherever.
People come to a decent sized venue. A few.
Yeah. I've been hearing that as well.
Showcase gigs.
Yeah.
Something like the Bloomsbury or some venue similar to that.
Want him at the Royal Albert Hall in his own
ideally,
right.
Ideally.
That would be terrific, actually.
Yes, that would be fabulous. Yeah. We'd be there for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. And then maybe, you know, one or two larger gigs, say, you know, one in Manchester, one in, you know, further up north.
Yeah.
Further up north.
Don't know.
I can almost hear Darren turning in.
Yes.
What? Okay.
Sorry, Darren.
But, I mean, were you referring to live and recorded album?
Yeah, both, yeah.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
I think as long as he's happy to sit recording in his in his studio, mm-hmm. and, you know, I don't think the muse will ever leave him.
Well, this is the thing. He's got that creative drive.
He's got things to say.
I mean...
Keep saying it.
Absolutely. I don't... The poet in him won't let him stop. Even for his own writing for his own enjoyment, he certainly won't stop. And, I mean, crikey, it's 40-plus years, you know. He's going to keep recording. I mean, as to what the material will be, I mean, who knows? I mean, okay, he's...
We were wondering that on the way up.
We were.
We wondered about a rap album.
A rap album, yes, absolutely, yes. Yes, return to Licorice All Time. Yes.
Yeah.
Get that gold medallion.
Get those young people on board.
That's it, yeah.
Hip-hop.
Yeah, or Psycho Skiffle.
Yeah.
All good ideas that I'm sure he'll take on board. Okay, well, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you both. I feel almost like we've only really skimmed a few of the topics, but we've had a good old natter. Is there anything else you want to bring up or anything, any message you want to put out there?
Well, actually, one little bit of trivia that I discovered, which, do you remember on the dear old vinyl, that on some of the records he used to scratch little messages on the lead out? Yeah, I had a little look through them, and because I remembered there were a few, and I couldn't remember what they all were, but Jugular had Utopia scratched onto it, and Burn the World said Play It Loud,
right,
and once there was that lovely quote from Blade Runner with Root Gahara's Batty talking to Hannibal, I think it was. He was the guy who used to make the replicant's eyes. And he said, if you could have seen the things I've seen with your eyes, which in itself is a very sort of Roy-like thing to say, isn't it? Mm-hmm. But anyway, apart from all that nonsense, I mean, if there's anybody out there who remembers some gigs in the past and we haven't sort of spoken to or seen recently, and I hope all's very well with you and yours, and give us a shout via the website. Send us an email. It'd be nice to hear from you.
All right, lovely. Yeah. Okay, Dave and Sue, thanks very much.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
See you later.
Bye.
We went to Morecambe and we saw the most uplifting statue that we've ever seen.
Britain. Actually, in the worst climate.
Ready?
Yeah.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while.
That was, of course, recorded at one of Dave's gigs, and I can't think of a more fitting way of remembering such a wonderful few years of his promotion and many gigs, many of which I actually got to down in Brighton, and I had a wonderful time, and I know that you remember very fondly those years, Dave. Thank you both for being such great interview subjects. Really enjoyed that. Now, around the time of the Unknown Soldier album, there was a single. One side was a live version of Unknown Soldier, the track itself, and the other side was something mysteriously called Water Sports. And I was asked whether I had access to those tracks and could put them on the podcast. Now, I had actually never heard these. Didn't have the single, but I put out a request and fortunately had offers of help, and some kind people came up with the track. What you're about to hear is courtesy of Steve T. Thanks a lot, Steve. The audio quality isn't up to my preferred standard, but here is The Unknown Soldier, and at the end of the podcast you'll also have the possibly dubious pleasure of listening to Water Sports.
This is another song. Good. This is the title track of the current record. I look forward with interest in the next 3,000 or 4,000 years, perhaps a little longer. The telepathic wars. Never has the human developed a talent yet that he hasn't used as a weapon. I am an old soldier. I've been in the wars, backwards and forwards, creeping on all fours. And I travel the pulses, unseen and alone. Dark fights in the cosmos, feeling the unknown. And I laugh in my sleep, sitting in the gutter, picking dog ends from the deep. I am an old soldier. I see in your face time's repeating the uniforms in space. Looking forward to doomsday, telepathy wars, dark my daydreams, imaginary doors. And I lie in my sleep, sitting in the gutter, picking dog ends from the deep. But in the night, a little boy is dreaming mysteries, looking after laughter with his sister climbing trees. Somewhere there's a button and a silent satellite, and a bastard who would press it, and an everlasting night. I'd hunt him like a tiger and I'd tear him to a shred. Nowhere you could hide, man. Me and the kids, we'd feed you to the dead. And I cry in my sleep, all the hungry children and the unbelieving sheep.
I want to talk no more of past, to dwell on mist that didn't last. but take a stepping stone across and be with you ere winter ends, that we may feel the shorter days of cozy candle-lighted haze grow into budding song of spring and burst upon us, heralding new times, horizons ever clear, in love to balmy bosom friends.
The live version of Unknown Soldier from the single there was followed by Ere Winter Ends from the Poems, Speeches, Thoughts and Doodles album. Now the A to Z of Harper, and it's Jay this time. Choices were fairly limited. The only track that I could find beginning with Jay is Jack of Hearts from the Work of Heart album, which I'm going to play very shortly. But I also had an idea about Jay, which was to mention Jay for Jimmy Page and Jay for Joanna Newsom, because it gave me an excuse to talk briefly about the whole kind of celebrity follower aspect of Roy's career. Like a lot of people listening to this, I imagine, I found Roy's music through a connection with Led Zeppelin, the Hats Off to Harper track, and also, of course, on Wish You Were Here, Pink Floyd's album, with him credited as singing the lyrics on Have a Cigar. So from that point of view, this kind of association with people that have really made the big time has done Roy a lot of favours, because it's driven a lot of people towards his door and hopefully made him some money and kept his career afloat. But I can't help feel sometimes that it also doesn't do him any particular favours, because when you see the admittedly fairly rare articles in magazines and so on where they finally realise that Roy exists and decided to do a little bit of a feature on him, they can't resist dragging out these lines about the fact that Jimmy was a fan and plays on this album and that album, and Kate Bush likes his stuff. And, you know, it seems to get a little bit tiresome to me. I don't know how you feel about it, but I just thought I'd throw that out there, see what people thought, if you've got any particular views on whether that has been a good or bad thing for Roy. Send us in some feedback, or even, dare I say, a voicemail. Anyway, Jack of Hearts from Work of Heart. As I've said in the past couple of podcasts, Work of Heart is not my favourite album, but this is a good track. And I think it bears up repeated listenings, even though, as I keep saying, the production values possibly are a little bit stuck in the 80s.
Time. she's living with a man apart. But any time she needs me, I'll be by her side. Just as long as she can help me to stand the flowing tide.
Now it's time for some listener feedback, and I'm delighted to say that once again I do have a voicemail. This time it's Alan Jones's turn. Now, poor Alan has been desperately trying to send in proper feedback to me and has been struggling with my telephone-based voicemail interface. I discovered that there's a limit of 90 seconds on the messages, and poor Alan has a lot to say. And possibly more than will fit into 90 seconds. Now, I'm actually working on a solution to this so that people can leave longer voicemails, and I'm hoping to hear from Alan again next month. But here is the truncated, concise version of Alan Jones's voicemail.
Hello, Paul. This is Alan Jones calling to add some vocal variety to your podcast. I'm doing a 3-in-1 feedback on the last 3 podcasts. They just keep on getting better. I've got to admit that I was completely taken in by April Fool's podcast with the revelations about your secret origami habit. I really enjoy hearing some of the Roy songs like If from his mid-period albums, which I'm not familiar with. These are a real treat for me. And I also think it would be okay to slip in the occasional non-Harper track if you think it's something really worth giving a wider hearing to. Also, I'm really enjoying the interviews, and I must say that, difficult as it must have been to be on the other side of the mic, you yourself were a really good interviewee. It was great to hear the way in which the mailing list and the website originated. I'm looking forward to the next episode. Keep up the good work. Bye.
Thanks a lot, Alan, and I hope that you won't be put off from calling in again in the future. Once I've fixed the voicemail issue, which we may have a solution for today, I've just got to do a bit more testing and fiddling around this evening once I've finished recording the podcast. Now, in terms of written feedback, there was a fair bit. The thing that amuses me the most is that Nick Lane seems to have acquired the nickname Zany Laney. Thoroughly impressed with that. Thank you, Adam Leonard, for coining that particular one. Really good. Actually, a lot of people quite like the interview that Nick did with me. I'm not going to go on about what we talked about too much, but there was a lot of positive comments about it, really. And Nick Lane himself then somewhat possibly bravely admitted that he had the nickname of Bronco when he was at school, and there was a bit of discussion about where that came from. Bob Jacobs says, wasn't he a character in one of the innumerable black and white westerns we used to watch on the box in the 60s? Well, I don't know. Peter Herring says, I have to say that Nick Lane is an underrated talent, a great interviewer with an astute, incisive and flowing style. I'd bet there was a minimum of edits in this interview, am I right, Paul? Yeah, kind of. Nick has something that not all upfront presenter type people have, that ability to relax his interviewee while remaining as cool as an apple cucumber in his direction. Go and have a listen to Nick's own interview in the earlier podcast. Thanks, Nick and Paul. Nice one, Pete. Thanks very much. And Alan Jones says, about the nickname Bronco Bronco tearing across the Texas plain. Bronco 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 Lane. There ain't a horse that he can't handle. There ain't a horse that he can't tame. There ain't a horse that he can't handle. That's how he got his name. Then says, got me wondering, Nick, when you worked as a milkman, you didn't have a horse-drawn float, did you? Nick has been surprisingly quiet since then, for reasons which may be apparent anyway. Some people have said, interesting comparisons between Malinist and Stormcock.net site. This is from Mr. Plod the Pessimist. And some of my ranting about off-topic stuff and so on hit a bell with... bell with some people, and other people don't mind very much. But as I tried to portray, having both channels, Malinist and websites forums, will hopefully cater for all needs. And of course, this audio forum is completely different, and this is completely self-centered and egotistical. But there you go. And Steve T says, the exciting bit for me is listening to the final piece of music to see if anything has been tagged on after it. I can't be the only one to make the full distance, surely. Don't know what you're talking about, Steve. I never put anything on the end of the podcast. Very strange indeed. Okay, what else have we got? One or two people commenting on my show nuts, which again, if you don't know what I'm talking about, you need to listen to the very end of last podcast. Fuzzy TNTH3 says, excellent, Paul. Enjoyed the choice of tracks and an insight to your motivations behind what you provide for all us loonies on the bus. Particularly weird hearing my own voice in there to boot. I can see why many actors and musicians never listen or watch themselves once a piece of work is completed. Fuzzy, of course, had an audio feedback on the last. You heard his lovely Scottish tones. I think it's Scottish anyway. I hope I'm not in trouble now. Mr. Lane is an excellent deputy interviewer. Perhaps he can act as a roving reporter for the podcast. Actually, that's a pretty good idea. And I want to get Nick back on doing other stuff. As if he hasn't got enough to do. I'm sure we'll work out some way of bringing him in later. There was a bit of talk about accents. And Fuzzy said, when I first moved from Horsham in Sussex back to Scotland, my voice got me into lots of fights with the kids in my school, all because I sounded posh and English. And Sean says, I had the same trouble moving from Preston Lancs to Peterborough age 13. I lost count the amount of fights I had over the difference in accent. Crazy times, but a massive learning curve so early in life. Wee Steve says, thoroughly enjoyed number 9. Apart from the obvious excitement of finding out the truth behind the enigmatic mystery that is PD... Right, the alphabetical conjunction of I'll See You Again and If made my day. Two great songs, which in themselves display the range of Roy's talent for hitting the mark. Although, like you, I love the long rambling material, these two succeed for their very simplicity. Oh yes, and I shall be recommending Nick Lame. That's another nickname there, isn't it? Nick Lane is a replacement the next time Jonathan Bleeding Wass's contract is up for renewal. Mm-hmm. Okay. More feedback along the same lines from Sean and Bob saying that they enjoyed the songs and it was good to get a bit of background on stuff. Friar Snig says, Nick's interview with Paul was far more interesting than I'd anticipated. Well, if you've got low expectations, you can always have a good time. I now have a much greater appreciation of the work Paul has done. Thanks, Paul. Good stuff. I may even feel inspired to send a few spoken words. Yes, please, is my reply to that. Alan Jones, who, as you've already heard from on the audio, was confused about my playing of White Man from Les Cousins. He says, does anyone know why, when the introductory ramble is the one that was edited down for Black Baroque and goes on about how the song needed to be done live for the Flat Baroque and Berserk album to do it justice, the actual song on Flat Baroque is not the version Roy played at Les Cousins after his You're on the Record Now, Striking a Match, epic intro? And if it is a studio cut, why stick with the pretense of a live performance? Does it say something about Roy's integrity? Does it matter in the least? I promise that if I do phone the feedback line, it won't be to obsess about this. And what I replied on the forum was to say, you're right in saying that the version on the album is different from the one at Les Cousins. The liner notes for Les Cousins say that White Man was recorded twice due to a string break. I can't say what ended up happening. Maybe the one that I played on the podcast from the Les Cousins album was the one that was rejected, though some splicing recovered the intro and outro. In the back of my mind, I've got a collection of reading... or being told that, in fact, the one on Flat Baroque was re-recorded in the studio after deficiencies were found in the live tapes, but I can't find that documented anywhere. So here's an open question for you, the listener. Can anybody authoritatively give us the answer to that one? Okay, that's it for feedback for now. Since people were saying that they liked some of the short numbers, I thought I'd do something a bit weird here and play the very short version of the Death of God single.
Welcome to heaven, I'm your creator. I bid you welcome to the promised land. Sorry I made you bomb all those children. They were all warned and they fully understand. My will be done on earth, and they were slow to learn. My will be done on earth, otherwise eternally you burn. And so eternally they'll burn. I am the interventionist God, and I'm warning you. I will intervene. Into your cooking and your books and your disinterest rates and all of your domestics in between. I am the wood I touch, my fingers always cross. I'm superstitious to the core. I step across the cracks, down every street I walk. That way I know I'll win the war. History will prove me right. I'll find those WMD. Cross my heart and hope to die. What's that you say? Blank, zero, nothing, zilch, a duck egg, duck egg. Oh no! Oh, oh no! Oh no, I think I just fell out the sky. I think I just fell out the sky.
Well, we're reaching the end of the podcast now, and I'm delighted to say I've kept the length down a little bit this time, rather than prattling on for 80, 90 minutes or whatever. So the credits, copyright, this podcast is issued under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial No Derivative Works, 2.0 UK, England and Wales licence. That means you can share it with others, but you can't change it, claim you made it, or charge for it. The Roy Harper music in this podcast is used by kind permission of Science Friction Limited and is not for copying or redistribution. Thank you once again, Roy, for your permission. The intro music is by kind permission of Adam Leonard, and you can find out more about Roy Harper, the music, the tracks that I played and the albums they came from, and Adam's music by looking at the show notes that accompany the podcast at stormcock.net. If you want to send voicemail, which I keep pleading for, as you know, and I'm starting to reap the rewards of that, you may call 01223 850 282. That's +44 1223 850 282 if you're not inside the UK. Currently a 90-second limit on those, but after Monday night, who knows what limits we will have? Possibly none. Actually, probably, but more likely to be about a quarter of an hour. And if anybody manages to prattle on for a quarter of an hour, I'll be extremely impressed. To finish off this month, first of all, Water Sports from the Unknown Soldier single. And then we'll have In a Beautiful Rambling Mess from Come Out Fighting Genghis Smith, which I wanted to play actually on the podcast that concentrated on the letter I, but I ran out of time because there was far too many really nice tracks beginning with I. Okay, see you next month. Let's hope we have a bit more of a summer, those of you in the UK. It started to be summery for a little while, then it stopped. Oh well. Okay, bye for now.
This is called Water Sport. We had a... Thank you. It's got me to the best angle there. In full lunacy. This is something I wrote after a conversation. Someone in the party, I've forgotten who it is now. Maybe he shall remain nameless to protect the innocent. Said that somebody else had got a job as a secretary to a prostitute and accepted a call one day to this effect. Hello. Do you do water sports? So I thought I'd write this poem because I live in this street where the dog turds are abundant. A lot of water with them too, because there's a shop halfway down the street that's called the Dog House, where the local canines get altered according to the taste of their ape-like owner. This is a poem. In the street, the dogs are cutting. And the turds are getting big. They're feeding them on ghoulies from remains of rotting pig and lurking in dark heaps of goo. These messages are spread by unsuspecting passing shoes who see not where they tread. And when there's no one looking, late at night, and I'm undressed and just can't make the bathroom, though my bladder's sorely pressed, I sneak out of the window with a foot of throbbing flesh. And golden shower the gunge below from three floors with a splat. Last night, I got to thinking. I could do it anywhere. Without a care or worry of someone being there. I'd buy the Daily Smelly Graph and roll it long ways on and fill it with my rod and staff and have some sneaky fun. Waiting for the dogs to come and fuck a leg or two. If I don't, come and get my bone and wet the bugger through. Phil Wellington's on shoe stands and pockets at the match. The gallery at Westminster. The Iron Maiden snatch.
I was taking the air one sunny evening, watching everything being happy. In a fire the restless sun was turning, in my body the pages of my love. And I saw them all soaring past, from the first to the very last, through
through the surging crests of the waves of a memory made from them all by everyone. Yesterday's laughing, loving round my head. I remember the times when I was. Oh. What a beautiful sunset sky. Pleading words, burning eyes, and dripping hot body. Scorching fury of youth that fills me yet. But as sweet as these memories are, a fantastic sky. They're as near as the furthest star, just a daydream away, sheltered by some nearest far. What a sky, laughing, loving round. What's her name? She's a lovely piece of woman. Flowing hair in the early morning. Well, I think I'll sit down and use the sunset as a time ship to travel through. And I'll wander just where I please, through my wallowing dreams with ease. And the cows can come home and go out again, and I'll still be here after pancake doomsday. What a beautiful rambling mess we live.
Hey, thanks for listening to today's podcast. We'll be here next time. Keep the emails coming in and be sure to subscribe.